Hi, and welcome to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly show about finance, money, and investing. I'm your host, Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. We broadcast locally on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally across the Community Radio Network. I'm really pleased to welcome back to the microphone Natasha Panagis from the Institute of Financial Professionals Australia. I've got to tell you, Natasha, I'm really pleased. You've been on the show often enough now that I can get that out without falling over my tongue. So welcome back. It's really good to have you.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me back on.
Wonderful. Now, last time we talked about a big subject around the $3 million cap, and we want to cover off a little bit about that because I mentioned it locally in a magazine, also the Tawny Frogmouth, which we're starting to do a little bit more regular insert about financial education. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up to your attention is that last year, the ATO and the CFR, which is the Council of Financial Regulators, in September 22 did a bit of a study on SMSFs and borrowing. Now, I guess there's a lot of industry bodies that are commenting, including yourselves at IFPA. What are some of the key findings of that particular review last year?
That's right, Ray. It was around September last year where the ATO and the CFR did this report. Just for those who might be thinking, who is the CFR? It's the coordinating body for Australia's main financial regulatory agencies. So it's made up of four members. It's APRA, it's ASIC, it's Treasury and the RBA, who's actually chairing the council. Saying that, this report looked at LRBAs, or limited recourse borrowing arrangements, which allow super funds to borrow to purchase an asset. And it was good news what was found. Firstly, the main thing that was found was that LRBAs are unlikely to pose a material risk to the super system or to, and also will not provide a risk to the broader financial system. So this view was consistent with the very first report that was handed down back in 2019. So great news. Government's not banning limited recourse borrowing arrangements or LRBAs. And it's good because there is a need and place for them for certain people, particularly people who are small business owners who might be using their commercial property to, you know, help meet their retirement income goals. And it's, and we often do see property and in SMSFs for a certain cohort of people, such as small business operators or farmers. The other great piece of news that was found as part of this report was that rather than prohibiting or abolishing limited recourse borrowing arrangements, the report found that all that will happen is a continued monitoring of LRBAs and just to report on an as-needed basis, mainly to ensure an oversight of risks that might be present in this space. So we're likely to probably see another review or another report into LRBAs in the next few years' time. I'd say probably another 3 years' time if you go by, you know, what's happened in the past. But when we're talking about risks with LRBAs, we're talking about things like leverage risk and also the risk or threat to some people through the use of these one-stop property shops and other investment property spruikers that are going around providing unsolicited personal advice around property and convincing people to roll over into an SMSF and start up a fund and purchase property, because there's certainly a lot of them going around. But, yeah, look, in the end, there are no changes. LRBAs are here to stay, and that's great news because it does really provide a great way for some people to benefit from this strategy for a whole range of reasons.
I guess that's one of the good bits of news, because certainly, and you and I have covered this off before on the show, is that when commercial borrowers specifically and small business owners do borrow using their SMSFs, there's some really, really big benefits to be gained, and there's some CGT, some capital gains tax benefits to be gained as small business owners. And I think we've highlighted that. I know Neville Berthasil from IFPA has come on the show as well, and we've talked about those. And I think really it's pleasing to know that things are going to keep going on with LRBAs. I must, though, air a sound of caution, because being a licensee myself, I hold an AFSL, we get approached by people to be authorised under our licence. And the number of times I keep saying no to exactly the kind of agency that you're just talking about before, where you've got property spruikers. And ladies and gents, let's be clear here. To sell real estate, you simply need a real estate agent's license. But a lot of people, and Natasha, you rightly point out, they certainly cross the line. They walk into a realtor's office, come out 3 months later, and all of a sudden they're an SMSF trustee and they've got a borrowing arrangement. And after all this is said and done, no word of personal advice has been given, according to these people. And so I sit there and I'm curious, at IFPA, do you get a lot of inquiries about these specific schemes?
Yeah, look, I do speak to our members often, and there are some cases where our members, who are professional tax advisors and financial advisors, and now their members are everyday people, and there are a lot of people out there that are being approached by these property spruikers to, you know, roll over any money they might have in their APRA regulated funds, set up an SMSF, and all of those things. But the ATO is watching closely. It has issued a number of warnings to SMSF trustees and to people in general to be aware of such schemes that are targeting people to set up funds. And it's also, the ATO has also recommended a number of strategies or things for tax professionals to be aware of and to report such schemes that are marketed to their clients to protect them in their practice. So ATO is certainly aware, watching closely, and is trying to put a stop to it, because there are many people who are being impacted by these schemes.
I guess as an adjunct to that final comment from you, Natasha, in your consultations with Treasury that you've been doing, for example, on the $3 million cap and your exposure around LRBAs, I'm wondering, can you foresee in the future that there may be a tightening in regulations around this real estate issue? Because right now, I'm not an outsider, I'm an insider, but I see this primarily, it's more like a loophole that they're exploiting because of the lack of licensing around real estate. And they're not considering it a product, whereas those of us in the industry, we look at what's going on and we clearly see there's advice being given, there's product being sold, yet there's some convincing of themselves who are doing the selling that this is all okay. So my question, sorry if I'm a bit long-winded, but my question to you is, can you foresee, for example, the regulatory body stepping up and soon banning this kind of activity?
Look, maybe not in the short term. I don't think so, because I know that they are taking quite a strict stance on this and doing a lot of, warning about these schemes that are out there. So at this point, besides the education and the warning to trustees and to professionals to keep an eye on these things, I don't think we will see anything further in this space for a little while. But it's the warning that's coming towards SMSF trustees is that warning them of the risks. You know, you're going to lose your retirement savings, and if you go down this approach or down this path, there might be serious penalties because, you could end up being disqualified. You could lose your superannuation balance. There's a whole range of, super law breaches that could occur if people access their super a lot sooner to get into these schemes. So I think at this point it's more about education, being aware of what you are and are not allowed to do. But inevitably, if we do see more of these cases pop up, then who knows, we might see some legislative change in the future. But for now, I think they're just taking this approach of watch, be careful, and be aware.
Okay, so they're going to wag the finger and say to people, please be cautious. I guess the worst instincts of humankind, though, and greed, I think, end up taking over sometimes. And I guess for a younger cohort, because I consider myself, over 60 years old now, in that older cohort, and with retirement just around the corner, but somebody that's 20, 30 years younger, the idea of, something happening to their SMSF balance is so far in the distance that kind of impact tends to maybe be lessened somewhat. And I must say, I'm just curious whether you ever tell your members, Neil Sparks from the SMSF Association came on recently and put some real numbers around the penalty points that can be put on these kind of breaches, they're pretty severe, aren't they?
They are certainly, you know, and this is why they're warning to just be aware, because, you know, you might be, in many cases, it's not deliberate for the person that's getting into these schemes. They're just being approached by these spruikers. But, you know, if it's considered to be illegal early access, where you've illegally early access to your superannuation early, I mean, that's a major issue. There are penalties involved there. And most years, these penalty unit price points do increase. So, you know, by simply doing something wrong, you could potentially suffer and have to pay penalties for such mistakes. So just to be aware.
I guess in wrapping up on this particular issue, one of the things I found when I became an SMSF trustee, and I could see the temptation, is that you actually control the bank account for your own SMSF. And I'm sure there's more than enough people out there sitting there going, well, nobody will notice if I give myself a little loan. You know, I'll put it back, I promise. And so I know that's one of those things, isn't it?
Well, Ray, that's it. I mean, borrowings, if you breach the borrowing rules, or if you lend to yourself or to relatives, that is the administrative penalty for one of those breaches is the largest of penalties in the SIS, in the superannuation law. So that's a 60 penalty unit breach or penalty. So for each penalty unit, you know, it's now worth over, it's close to, I think it's just about $275 or about that $300 mark. So if you do the math, times that by 60 penalty units, you're up for quite a large penalty if you breach the laws when we're dealing with borrowing and lending to yourself. So really just need to be careful and try and do the right thing.
Okay, it's just about time for a break. You're here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm here with Natasha Panagis from the Institute of Financial Professionals Australia. We're going to go for a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, and thank you for listening to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly radio program about finance, money, and investing on Radio Northern Beaches and nationally on the community radio network around Australia. The views, comments, and opinions aired during our program should not be construed or viewed as financial advice. Any commentary is general advice only and does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. You should consider whether the advice is suitable for you and your personal circumstances. If in doubt, you should contact an authorised, licensed financial planner. We welcome questions and feedback, and you can get in touch with us via our blog, social media channels, or email. Please search for Dollars and Making Sense in your favourite podcast platform, or check out our blog at otgcapital.com.au/blog. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense, a weekly show about finance, money, and investing. I'm your host, Ray Trevison, and this week at the microphone, Natasha Panagis from the Institute of Financial Professionals of Australia. And we are talking about borrowing within your SMSF. Now, Natasha, before we went to the break, we were talking about penalties around doing the wrong thing with SMSFs. And again, I don't want to always be casting a down light. There are some really, really big benefits to investing in property and borrowing within the SMSF. And I know earlier this year you presented a paper to a number of conferences about the benefits. So what I'd like to do is maybe cover off some of those benefits to investing in property within your SMSF.
Yeah, sure. Look, there are so many advantages of, you know, buying property within your fund and borrowing. So firstly is that a LRBA can allow your fund to purchase an asset such as property, which might be otherwise out of reach if the SMSF were not able to borrow. So, you know, that's your first advantage, that you can do it within your fund. And we're talking about property which might be residential or it might be commercial. So, you know, it just depends on what it is that you're actually after. The second benefit is that your fund will receive all of the income and all of the deductions without having to fund the entire purchase price up front. Okay, so that's really quite a powerful advantage there. Also, the growth of the property or the asset that you choose to purchase in your fund will occur in the concessionally taxed superannuation environment. So for those that might not know, super funds pay a tax at a maximum rate of 15%, and the rate of tax on capital gains if an asset is held for more than 12 months effectively reduces to 10% when you eventually sell that asset. Now, if you are in pension phase and you have a pension in place, at the time that you sell that property, then capital gains tax may not be payable at all. So you potentially have a 0% tax rate if you're selling the asset whilst you're in pension phase. Now, this by far is, you know, one of the most important advantages. And lastly, also super fund members can make contributions to their fund, and that can include tax deductible contributions, and those contributions can be used to pay down the LRBA. So they're your top four advantages of having an LRBA and purchasing property within your fund.
And I guess one of the key aspects of those benefits is that not just within small businesses where you're using the property itself and paying proper rent, but I think the big one there is the capital gain. So in other words, particularly if you're in high growth areas, the advantage there is that you're getting capital growth that is going to be subject to a lot less tax at the end of the day. And I think within this already sanctioned tax haven of super, we're providing, you know, the government is providing an additional incentive to be in this space, which I think is great. Now, again, not wishing to be down all the time, but there are some key things and people trip up on this. And again, like I was mentioning before the break, when you're operating your own bank account, all of a sudden you've got your hands on the crown jewels. Similarly, some people start thinking they can do things with property that they really shouldn't. And I guess the big one is using that property, isn't it?
That's right. So a lot of people think that a property within their fund, they'll be able to use it, particularly if they retire. Now, this is a misnomer. Unfortunately, you can't use the property even if you do retire, because that property is meant to be there to provide a retirement benefit for yourself, and you can't get a present day value or a present day benefit from an asset of the fund. The only, difference to that rule is if it is a commercial property and you are using it for your business, then you are obviously leasing it from your fund. Your business is leasing it from your fund, and you're paying, you know, your fund commercial rates of rent. So that's the only time you are able to use property in your fund. Now, if, you know, that's a good segue into the next point to consider, is that if your dealings with your property in your fund are not on arm's length, so for example, you might be paying lower rates of rent, then that would not be seen to be on commercial rates of rent, and you could potentially trigger something called a non-arm's length arrangement, which could see your fund be taxed at the high rate of 45%. So really important that if you are doing dealings with your fund and it involves property, then everything must be on commercial rates or arm's length terms.
Now, I'm referencing your slide deck because, again, let's be specific here. It's not just you, but it's also a relative of a member. And I love this list. It's pretty expansive. Parent, grandparent, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, nephew, niece, lineal descendant, adopted child of yours or of your spouse, or your spouse or a spouse or any of the above individuals. So...
So it's not just you, is it? It's you and everybody else that's connected to you, or, you know, generally speaking. So you really just need to be careful that, you know, if just because it might not be you using the property, then it does include your, you know, your relatives or your associates. So you just need to be careful that whoever is in that property who might be renting it, you can't do that with a related party, but if we're talking, you know, there's a whole range of things to consider. So, you know, LRBAs are complex. You have to abide by all of the requirements in the law, which are quite complex. There are setup costs involved with setting these things up. You know, you need to get some legal advice, some tax advice about structuring. And the other thing to be aware of is if you are looking at borrowing to buy an asset within your fund, then it has to be for a single acquirable asset. Now, typically that's going to be something like property. So you can't, I suppose, borrow to invest in a diversified share portfolio because that's not considered to be a single acquirable asset. So typically we're talking about property here. And in most cases, when you look at the statistics from the ATO and we're looking at LRBAs, it's predominantly assets that are property, like residential property or commercial property, that are used to purchase, that are used within an LRBA. But as we all know, borrowing, gearing can magnify losses. So yes, that's, you know, you've got the advantages of receiving rent and the deductibility, you borrowing, if things turn around, then your losses can magnify there. Illiquidity, you know, you've got all your assets, all your money in one asset, which might be illiquid depending on whether you have a tenant in there that is paying you rent on a regular basis. If that person leaves or that tenant leaves, what does that mean for your cash flow? So you need to be aware of that. And also there are some really strict rules around if you have property in your fund, you can maintain it, you can repair it, but you cannot improve it if a borrowing is in place. So, you know, there are all of these things to consider. And lastly, well, I think the most important thing before you even get into an LRBA and investing in property, you need to think about, you know, what is the end plan? How are you going to get out of the fund? Because at some point in time, you know, you are going to either need to pay a death benefit or a retirement benefit. So you are going to need to think about, how are you going to deal with this lumpy asset? So you need to plan well ahead, make sure that you're going to be able to meet your cash obligations when an arrangement like this happens, whether you're retiring or whether a death benefit needs to be paid out, such as an emergency situation. So you just need to deal with that, to think about, well, how are you going to dispose of that asset? Are there going to be other people that are going to purchase it off you? Are you going to transfer that in your own name? So what's the end plan? So always invest with the end in mind.
I guess one of the aspects, that very lumpy nature of buying a property, it's not a small investment. And in the scope of how many people do LRBAs, it's found, and the statistics bear this out, that a lot of low asset people do this, and that's where the danger becomes. And this segues, I think, really nicely into the discussion that we had at the beginning of today's show around the $3 million soft cap and this new tax that is being proposed by the current government. So with that in mind, I guess one of the things, there's been a consultation period, Natasha, that's just finished. What's IFPA's stance now on this $3 million cap? I mean, there's a lot of people pretty upset about it. I know you guys were. There's some things there that I'm scratching my head going, this doesn't make sense. And I guess the liquidity of a fund becomes a real issue, because if all of a sudden people start breaching this cap, and more people will keep doing this over the next 10 years, the statistics are quite surprising how many people are going to get caught up in this. What's the IFPA's view now on this $3 million cap, and what kind of key things are you recommending back to the government to look at to go back to the drawing board?
That's right, Ray. It's disappointing. We did receive draft legislation was dropped not long ago now, and this proposed new tax, which has now been given a name, it's now called Division 296 tax. And it might seem a bit odd, but division where this new tax will sit is in Division 296 of the 1997 Tax Act. So that's what it's now called, but it's... This draft legislation that was released is largely unchanged from when it was first announced by the government earlier this year. Wow. So because it's effectively the same thing, it means that the same key issues remain unresolved. And that number one issue is that unrealized gains will be taxed. because the way the government considers earnings, it's based on your movements in your total super balance between one financial year to another, which means that, you know, whatever causes your balance to go up will, you know, if that pushes you beyond $3 million, then, you know, you're potentially going to pay up to an extra 15% tax on anything over $3 million. But, you know, things that might cause your balance to go up, and that could be things like interest, rent, dividends, all of those things, or it could be that a value of an asset has increased between one financial year to another, you're effectively potentially going to be paying tax on that amount over $3 million, even if you haven't sold it. So this is what we mean by unrealized.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is by far, you know, one of the biggest disadvantages of this new proposed tax. The other key issue that remains unresolved is that there'll be no refund of tax paid in years where your earnings might be negative and your balance drops below $3 million. So, you know, for example, in 1 year, if your balance goes beyond $3 million and it's worked out that you've got to pay a little bit of tax on anything above that $3 million, then you pay tax on that proportion over $3 million. But in other years where you might go down below $3 million, you don't get a refund of tax paid in that you've paid in previous years. So, you know, that's another you know, key issue that remains unresolved. And I suppose another big one is that this $3 million threshold will not be indexed, which is going to capture people over time. And
I guess you're not the only organisation. You know, I've picked up things off the wire recently. Chartered Accountants Australia are pretty rabid. I know the SMSF Association's not happy. You guys aren't happy. I mean, as a commentator, I'm certainly not happy, and I'm just surprised that these things don't make sense. And I guess we've got to wait and see for, you know, when this Division 296 of the 1997 Tax Act comes out, and we'll see specifics, because it'll still have to pass through the Senate, won't it?
Yeah, that's right. So at the moment it's draft form. Eventually it will be introduced into Parliament as a bill, and it must go through that usual process, you know, be introduced into the House of Representatives and then into the Senate and, you know, the usual process. But we've been lobbying hard with the government, and also, you know, encouraging our members to lobby their local members of Parliament to really make them aware of these key issues and try and get them fixed so that when this bill does get introduced into Parliament, that there is pushback from the crossbench and other members of Parliament to say, look, okay, we understand that superannuation must be fair and equitable for most people, but it needs to be done, the extra tax must be applied fairly. And it doesn't, it is not fair to pay tax on something that on an asset that you haven't sold yet.
So I think that's a good,
that'd be great.
That's a good wrap up for today's show, Natasha. Always a pleasure to have you on Dollars and Making Sense. Great topic, and I think there's a lot to happen before it's all said and done. Natasha Panagis from the Institute of Financial Professionals Australia, thank you for being on Dollars and Making Sense. And until next time, it's adios. See ya.
Thanks, Ray.